Reverend Amy asked me to announce Dontry Day in Milwaukee is April 30th from 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., sponsored by the Coalition for Justice, Black Lives Matter Coalition, and all local UU churches. A rally will begin at 12:30 p.m. at Center Street Library, followed by a short march to Red Arrow Park for a community celebration lasting until 8 p.m. that will include live entertainment, free food, and a memorial service as we remember Dontry Hamilton at Ground Zero. All are invited to participate and or volunteer for the many options. Sarah and Bud Hudson will be in the Kids Activity Corner from 1 to 3 p.m. See the flyer on Reverend Amy's door for details and the website address to sign up to help. There are many different options and times available. Now, John Kuhn asked me to announce that lawn mowing season is here again. And John has already initiated Green John, and he said that the battery is down, but that's being taken care of. So if you're willing and able to help with the lawn mowing task again this year, there'll be a sign-up sheet in the social hall, so please sign up. And last but not least, weather permitting, we are still hoping to have our Earth Day adopt a highway after the service today, if it isn't raining. We just meet in the back foyer, or the front foyer, rather, at 11:45, and we have the orange vests and gloves and bags and everything for you. All you need to do is provide the labor.
Good morning. How's the voice doing in the back of the room? Thank you. Our opening words this morning come to us from Victoria Safford, and Victoria is the minister of the White Bear Lake Unitarian Church in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Every morning, every day, we leave our houses and we decide what we'll take with us, what we'll carry, how much integrity, how much truth-telling, how much compassion, in case somebody along the way may need some, how much anger, how much humor, how much willingness to change or be changed, to grow and to be grown. How much faith and hope, how much love and gratitude. You pack these with your lunch and medications, your date book and your papers. Every day, we gather what we think we'll need, pick up what we love and all that we so far believe, put on our history, shoulder our experience and memory, take inventory of our blessings, and we start walking towards morning.
Please take a moment to introduce yourselves to the people around you. Could we have our chalice lighter? We hallow this time together by kindling the lamp of our heritage. So now please rise in body and spirit and join in singing our first hymn, number 207, Earth Was Given in the Garden. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Jerry Flakus, and I'm the worship committee, actually from the Green Sanctuary Committee, for this morning service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives, and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered the disdain for their differences. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Also, there's an insert from the UU Ministry for Earth, which includes a donation and membership form. Like and follow LCUUC on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all the electronics you may have here with you today. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us. One of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward. We've got a basket up here. At this point, or ask a child to bring them forward for you, and they can bring them. They can bring them up when they come for their children of all ages. There are stories for all ages, which isn't yet. So right now we have some special music for you.
Get ready, there's a train coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. So people get ready for the train to Jordan, picking up passengers from coast to coast. Faith is the key, open the doors and board them. There's room for all among the love the most. There ain't no room for the hopeless sinner who hurt all mankind just to save his own. Have pity on those whose chances are thinner, cause there's no hiding place for the kingdom's throne. So people get ready for the train to come in. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord.
Don't need no ticket,
you just thank the Lord.
Now I invite the children of all ages, come up and join us on the carpet here with Elizabeth for a story.
Good morning. How many of you guys like to climb trees? Yeah. I've got a story for you. This is called Luna and Me. Nearly 1,000 years ago, a redwood tree named Luna sprouted on a hillside. She grew up in a big family with strong roots. Julia was born some 13,000 full moons later. Her family was always moving. Upon arriving in each new town, she scurried off to explore the forests. She whispered her secrets to the animals, and soon the animals trusted Julia. Once, a butterfly rested on her finger all day long, which is how she got her nickname, Butterfly. Luna, the redwood tree, held butterflies too, and wise spotted owls, friendly banana slugs, gentle turkey vultures, daring flying squirrels, shy foxes, and a menagerie of forest friends. One day, Butterfly wandered into an ancient cathedral of redwood trees. Her heart beat wildly, thump-a-thump, thump-a-thump. "Hello," a curious butterfly called up into Luna. "Is anyone home?" Broken branches stuck out of Luna's trunk like porcupine quills, and her side was tagged with a big blue X. The redwood quivered with excitement the way she always did when a new visitor arrived. Luna thought, "Do you like to climb trees? Give me a try, please." All aflutter, Butterfly called out, "Here I come." When she reached a comfortable perch, Butterfly introduced herself. "I am Butterfly, and you, Luna, are a ladder to the moon." Luna smiled and sighed. "Welcome, little Butterfly. You are brave to have ventured up so high." Butterfly marveled at Luna's view of the world. She spied a river twisting this way and that, and she looked closer. And then Butterfly realized what the big blue X meant on Luna. That meant the tree would soon be chopped down. Suddenly, an idea sprouted deep inside Butterfly. "If I stay with Luna, no one will be able to cut her down." But Butterfly would need a lot of support. Her friends were eager to help. "Heave ho, up you go." They brought her food and a tarp, things to cook with. That night, she slept under a tapestry of starlight. The next morning, Butterfly awoke to voices far below. Her friends said, "How can we help? You are very strong. We believe in you." The people who wanted to cut the tree down said, "You are not allowed to be here. Go home." "She'll come down when it storms," said one. Up top, Butterfly held on tight to what she believed in, which was Luna. But living 180 feet high in the tree wasn't easy. Her treehouse was only the size of a sandbox. She cooked all her food in one small pot, and there wasn't a bathroom. She had to be creative. She collected rainwater to drink and bathe in. But soon, refreshing rains grew into fierce storms. Butterfly could barely hold on. Lightning struck all around, and thunder shook her courage. "I want to go home," she cried. But the howling wind swept her voice away. Butterfly climbed inside her cocoon and drifted to sleep. In her dream, Luna spoke to her. "I'm frightened, Luna," she said. And Luna said, "I will hold you." When she woke up, she discovered the sun. Butterfly kicked off her shoes and spent the day turning her tree into a home. She explored each branch and met all of her tree mates, and still there was more. Deep within Luna's split trunk, butterfly discovered a magical cave. It was alive. She found ferns, huckleberry, furry green moss, tiny mushrooms, bugs, chickadees, hummingbirds, chipmunks, and even a fox. Luna, butterfly chirped, you are a forest within a forest. Butterfly shared stories of Luna in the forest with anyone who would listen, and many people did. Busy days whirred and blurred into weeks and months, and then a whole year. She lived up in that tree for a whole year, and then another whole year. Butterfly worried, will Luna ever be safe? Then, finally, on day 738, a message arrived. Butterfly, it said, Luna is safe. No one will cut her down. Love, your friends. P.S. You can come down now. As her toes touched the soft earth, Butterfly cried, we did it, Luna. But she didn't want to leave her friend. Butterfly hugged Luna goodbye and heard Luna's voice in her heart. It said, as you grow strong and tall toward the sun, remember to bend with the wind. And when you dream and dance in the rain, I'll be here doing the same. And here's a picture of the Luna Preserve. They did not cut those trees down. And here is a picture of the real butterfly and the real Luna. She really did spend 2 years in a tree. Thank you for joining me.
Okay, the children will now be going to their RE classes, and if we could sing them out with a song with a You Shall Go Out and Joy, which is in your order of service. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. Now, undesignated donations will be given to the UU Ministry for the Earth today, because it is Earth Day Sunday.
Just a little rain. it said to the heavenly sound, just a little rain, just a little rain. What have they done to the rain? Just a little boy standing in the rain, the gentle rain that falls for years, and the grass is gone, the boy disappears, and rain keeps falling like helpless tears. And what have they done to the rain? Just a little breeze out of the sky, the leaves nod their heads as the breeze blows by. Just a little breeze with some smoke in its eye. And what have they done to the rain? Just a little boy standing in the rain, the gentle rain that falls for years, and the grass is gone, the boy disappears, and rain keeps falling like helpless tears. And what have they done to the rain? And what have they done to the rain?
This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or concern to share please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is Barb. A few months ago, I was in near tears and asking your concern for my older sister who was going through treatment for ovarian cancer. Well, now it's joy. She got through her chemo, her radiology, and she's decided she's done with this thing. She's playing tennis. She's back. Thanks for all your prayers.
Hello. A candle of concern for my father-in-law who's been diagnosed with colon cancer.
As earlier mentioned, we are going to be celebrating D'Entrée Day this coming Saturday, and we have the joy of being able to participate. You can do it online, and also we will have some sign-up sheets that will be on the table in front of the office and in the general meeting room.
A candle of joy for my son, Devin, who turned 9 yesterday.
A Good morning. This is Al. Candle of joy and thanks for this church community, especially Mr. Philip Smith. I have a old house and a old cement, broken, no longer driveway and garage. So through Phil's engineering and my stupid manual labor, moving some 5-plus tons of sand and stone and mixing with Karen, we no longer are bumping and smashing as we go down the driveway into the garage. So thank you, Phil, and thank you to this church community for having people like Phil that we can simply say, hey, can you help me?
This is Claire. I have a joy. This week is Reverend Amy's birthday on Thursday. I'm sure she would appreciate happy birthday greetings from all of us. Thanks.
And this is Jim. If you would light a candle of joy for the return of the hummingbirds and a candle of anticipatory joy for the Orioles that should be here this week.
Hi, this is Mark. I have two candles of joy. First, I was at a celebration of life service in New Mexico for a close cousin. And just what an amazing man her husband was, as a good Samaritan like Phil Smith. It just helped out so many in his life. And for my daughter, who will turn 31 tomorrow. So.
This is Carrie, and I'd just like a candle of joy for Sheila's music that we've been able to enjoy for so many years, and she's still giving us joyful music, even though she'll be moving in a couple months, and we will really, really miss your music, Sheila.
Good morning, Melissa. A candle of joy, Quentin and I get to go on a vacation this week, and we have not taken a vacation, sans children, in 9 years since having children, so we're very excited.
And one last candle for the joys and concerns which we keep in our hearts. Our first reading today was written by David Cohen and delivered to the Skagit, Washington UU Fellowship in November of 2009. Excuse me. The ways of the forest, cutting wood, I leave a log to rest on the path to the woodpile. I walk past that log every week and watch it change. Mushrooms grow on it, then fungi and mold. Insects come and go. The log gets smaller, but ever so slowly. After 8 years, I kick at it, and it falls into smaller bits. A year or two later, and I can no longer tell where it lay. It is a life. It is my life. It is the way of nature and the world. It makes me feel part of the whole cycle, and I feel at peace. I believe in the forest. Everyone has a job in the forest. Everyone knows its job. The trees and plants grow together in harmony. Everyone shares the sun, soil, and water. Everyone follows the rules and respects each other. Seasons come and go, and everyone knows what to do. Leaves fall, and the tiniest creatures recycle them. The animals who live in the forest know their parts in the drama and cooperate. Some eat of the forest, while others are eaten.
In the end, everyone dies and is recycled anew. Everything and everyone is needed and does its part. There's a true interdependence. It is nature's way, evolved over time, truly a miracle of balance. I believe in the ways of the forest. Now, if you would, let's join in a moment of silent contemplative meditation or the spirit of prayer.
Our second reading this morning comes to us from Howard Zinn, the late great historian. It's called To Be Hopeful in Bad Times. Here's Howard. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, and kindness. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places, and there are so many where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act, and at least the possibility of sending this spinning top of a world in a different direction. And if we do act, in however small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents of today, and to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 134.
Thank you.
18 years ago today, Earth Day 1998, marked a historic victory for Wisconsin's clean water and the clean government safeguards that protect our water. On that day, on the banks of the Wolf River in northeastern Wisconsin, Governor Tommy Thompson signed into law legislation that became known as the mining moratorium. Thompson was not a fan of the legislation, but circumstances had left him little choice but to grin and bear it and go along. A massive, broad, and energetic grassroots coalition of tribes, sportsmen, and common sense conservationists had outmaneuvered Thompson and his friends in the mining industry, including Exxon, then the planet's largest energy corporation. That broad coalition was notable. Two of the main groups composing that coalition, the tribes and the sportsmen, had been in conflict over the tribes' assertion of their treaty rights, their right to spearfish. That adversarial dynamic changed as a proposed mine at Crandon, at the headwaters of the Wolf River, threatened the wild rice beds of the Ojibwe and the sport fish of the Wolf River. Common affection for the pristine waters of the Wolf River watershed united the tribes and the sportsmen, as well as many other groups such as paddlers, to campaign against the mine proposal. Mole Lake Chippewa elder Fran Van Zyl nailed it when she said, "It's not about the mine, it's about the water." The mine proposal was for a metallic sulfide mine, a particularly dangerous and polluting form of mining that frequently leads to long-lasting water pollution and rivers running orange. After blocking the threat of a proposed mine, the citizens' campaign pivoted to a legislative campaign designed to establish a clear and substantial test for any further mine proposals. This "Show Me It Is Safe First" legislation that resulted from that effort simply stated that any mine proposal would have to present evidence of a similar mine operated safely for 10 years and closed for 10 years without any pollution problems. It was a common sense statute espousing fundamental principles of due diligence. But the mining industry hated it. The citizens' campaign was unstoppable, and the legislation passed by astounding margins. The vote in the assembly was 91-7. In the Senate, it was 21-6. Question for you all, and for me. When we see this kind of grassroots, place-based, love of the land coalition, uniting diverse groups of people to act for the common good, aren't we seeing a mass outbreak of citizen spirituality? Isn't it in our interest to duplicate these movements and look for local opportunities to convene similar discussions and campaigns? Worth noting,
The victorious coalition that prevailed in the Crandon campaign bears a remarkable resemblance to the movement that brought us a notable victory last November. The campaign that blocked construction of the Keystone XL tar sands crude oil pipeline, that threatened Nebraska's groundwater, the Ogalla Aquifer. Once again, tribes played a large part, this time in what came to be known as the Cowboy and Indian Alliance. What started as a local skirmish in Nebraska, pitting tribes, ranchers, and farmers against a proposed crude oil pipeline, grew into a pitched battle over the creation of new infrastructure to support the fossil fuel industry and one of their most extreme products, tar sands crude oil. An early hearing on the proposed pipeline took place in May 2010 in York, Nebraska, west of Lincoln. For local people living along or near the proposed pipeline's route, the issue had enormous personal significance. It didn't help any that the pipeline was basically an export scheme. It was designed to get the crude oil to the Gulf of Mexico and then on to the world market. About 100 ranchers and farmers, concerned that the impacts of oil spills from the proposed pipeline would lead to land and water contamination, spoke out against the pipeline at the hearing. Jane Cleed, director of a progressive advocacy group, Bold Nebraska, was in the audience at the hearing. Cleed moved into action, organizing locals against the pipeline. On a parallel track, Clayton Thomas Mueller, a Cree Indian and organizer from the Indigenous Environmental Network from Canada, began organizing among the tribes along the pipeline route. Canadian tribes are known as First Nations, and the Alberta tar sands extraction and transportation had a horrible impact on the Canadian First Nations and their land and water. As that Nebraska organizing moved forward, the campaign picked up allies in the national environmental movement. Author and activist Bill McKibben and others sensed an opportunity in the pipeline proposal. Unlike many climate issues, such as power plant emissions, the pipeline was easy to understand. A series of demonstrations in the nation's capital followed, and environmentalists heeded the call to step forward and support the citizens of Nebraska in their campaign. Notably, a demonstration in August of 2011 featured a total of 1,200 activists and citizens volunteering to risk arrest. Day after day, for 2 weeks, a new group stepped forward, sat down at the White House fence, and were arrested. It was the largest act of civil disobedience on this continent during this century. Terry Wiggins and Joanne Backer of First Unitarian Milwaukee Congregation were among those arrested. Another Keystone demonstration had 15,000 people surround the White House. In addition, a rally with Reject and Protect as its theme saw teepees set up on the National Mall while ranchers and tribes, the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, paraded on horseback, protesting the proposed pipeline. The creative tactics weren't just saved for Washington, D.C. Back home in Nebraska, the campaign held a barn raising, erecting a barn with solar panels on land directly in the pipeline's proposed route. Another action saw Bold, Nebraska hosting a pumpkin carving party in the fall of 2011. Hundreds of supporters surrounded the governor's mansion with jack-o'-lanterns that spelled out, quote, 91 leaks and zero regulations is scary. A reference to a prediction about the number of times that the Keystone Pipeline was predicted to fail and leak. The campaign worked. Against what initially seemed like overwhelming odds, it was a spectacular example of grassroots organizing and effectiveness. Its relentless street theater and never give up energy prevailed. Eventually, President Obama felt empowered to do the right thing, and in November of 2015, he rejected the permit application for the Keystone XL pipeline. A new phrase came into being, the, quote, Keystonization of pipeline proposals. Industry cynics saw this as NIMBY, N-I-M-B-Y, or not in my backyard. Myself and many others do not accept that label. Yes, it is natural to defend our local communities, but it is also logic to link our local defense to those things, such as tar sands, that threaten all life on this planet. So we don't see this as NIMBY. We see this as NOPE, N-O-P-E, not on planet Earth. Let's bring this discussion home. Home to Wisconsin, home to Heartland, home to Waukesha County and neighboring parts of southeastern Wisconsin. It turns out we have opportunities right here to apply some of the lessons and tactics of the Crandon and Keystone campaigns. Big Oil has big ugly plans for Wisconsin and the Great Lakes region. Wisconsin is being targeted as a transportation corridor, both for a major expansion of tar sands crude oil pipelines and for a pipeline on rails. Mile-long trains of tank cars carrying explosive crude oil from the Bakken region of North Dakota. 40 miles west of here, in western Jefferson County and eastern Dane County, Enbridge, the Canadian Pipeline Company, wants a major expansion of their tar sands crude oil pipeline system. The pipeline corridor runs from Superior, Wisconsin in the north to Delavan and points south. Enbridge's expansion here is essentially an export scheme, an expansion of the same dynamics we saw with the Keystone proposal in Nebraska. The tar sands industry needs access to salt water to ship its product to the world market. 4 miles south of here, Canadian Pacific Railroad tracks carry a steady stream of Bakken crude oil trains through Heartland, as well as past Pewaukee Lake and through Milwaukee. Worth noting, the crude oil train that exploded in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec on July 6, 2013, killing 47 people, traveled those tracks on its way to Quebec. It could have been us. It could have been Tulsa. It could have been the Third Ward in Milwaukee. These pipelines and oil trains represent extreme oil products. Extreme in their extraction methods in the horrendous wasteland we know as the tar sands in Alberta, and the fracking oil wells of North Dakota. and extreme in the danger to the communities the oil is transported through. Notably, Wisconsin sand mines feed the fracking process in the oil fields, only to have explosive oil trains return to Wisconsin, sometimes passing those sand mines. Tar sands crude oil is virtually impossible to clean up after being spilled in water. Unlike conventional crude oil, it sinks. An Enbridge tar sands pipeline spill in Michigan's Kalamazoo River took $1.2 billion to clean up. Bakken crude oil has a notorious history of exploding into 20-story high fireballs after train wrecks. Wisconsinites have a long, proud history of questioning and blocking polluting industries. The Crandon Mine campaign and the recent successful statewide effort to block efforts to develop an iron mine in the Pinoki Hills are part of that history. Tar sands pipelines and crude oil trains threaten our water, our community's health, and our planet's health. We are hardly alone in our concerns. Landowners in central Wisconsin are organizing against the proposed pipeline expansion and have formed an organization called 80 Feet is Enough. 80 feet referring to the current width of the Enbridge pipeline corridor, which they want to expand to add even more pipes. At 11 a.m. this morning, in fact, a forum on the proposed pipeline expansion is happening at First Presbyterian Church in Marshfield. The campaign to counter Enbridge is gathering steam, with the Wisconsin Safe Energy Alliance, 350 Madison, and the Sierra Club pitching in alongside the landowners. Jane Klebe of Bold, Nebraska, was here last week to mentor the efforts. Further upstream in the pipeline, citizens and tribes in Minnesota are campaigning against Enbridge's expansion plans. The surge in oil traffic, a pipeline on rails, has produced a ferocious response from citizens in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and across the nation. Citizens Acting for Rail Safety, an organization I'm active in, has chapters in Milwaukee, Watertown, La Crosse, and the Twin Cities. Now is the time to mobilize citizen action and insist that elected officials stand up for not only clean water and healthy communities, but the clean government procedures that protect clean water. As we organize to counter these threats, let us remember the time-tested truths and bedrock spirituality that were the strength and success of the Crandon and Keystone campaigns. Question for you all, and for me. When we see this kind of grassroots, place-based, love of the land coalition, uniting diverse groups of people to act for the common good, aren't we seeing a mass outbreak of citizen spirituality? Isn't it in our interest to duplicate these movements and look for local opportunities to convene similar discussions and campaigns? Scan our Wisconsin history. Examine the citizens' campaigns in Nebraska, Minnesota, and elsewhere. And one thing is clear. We have done it before, and we can do it again. Thus ends our sermon message this morning.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And before we get into the polylog, and we will have one, I'm holding here in my hand a $1 million bill. If any of you would like one, please see me after the service, but you have to listen to the grassroots effort that's behind it. That being said, if you have any questions and answers or response for Alec or for Eric, now is the time. Just raise your hand and somebody will bring you a microphone.
This is Rick. I spent last week, I went 2,400 miles on Amtrak on the train.
Yeah.
So I got to see eastern Texas, which is really flooded, western Texas, where they haven't seen rain in years.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you don't fight Mother Nature, I've learned that. And it was kind of discouraging to see some things, the pollution in the waters and the rivers, and because of the flooding, that increases the pollution. But then there were some positive things when I got to Arizona. They're really, really increasing their solar. They don't have water, but they have sun. So it's kind of a mixed thing for me, but I thought I'd relate that. Thank you.
I'm a big fan of Amtrak, and I typically take the train to Flagstaff every winter on my way to go hiking in the Grand Canyon. It's a great trip. Thanks.
I know some people who have farm-related industries up in Canada, and they relate that that the tar sands operations up there have these big ponds, and they hire people to shoot guns off regularly to keep the birds from landing, because if they would land, they would die. But obviously, they're not going to keep shooting guns off forever. So at some point, the guys with the guns are going to go away, and the birds are going to land in those ponds and die.
If you've ever seen pictures of the tar sands, it looks like hell. I mean, it is an obscenity. I mean, basically, it's strip mining, and tar sands in its raw form looks like, asphalt or hardened peanut butter or something. As far as the emissions and everything else, it is filthy oil. It's exactly the wrong direction for us to be going. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of people who made investments in these things. And there's this fundamental choice that we're going to be facing as a planet. Do they have a right to make money on these, quote, deposits? And the same thing with coal and other kinds of oil or natural gas. Or do we have a right, and do future generations have a right, to a planet that is livable? You're not going to be able to have both things. Most of those deposits have to stay in the ground or the earth is fried.
This is Al. I'm solidly behind the idea of environmental stewardship. But I would ask you to help me understand or perhaps better relate what you mean by this being spiritual.
I think that's certainly an opinion call. For me, I notice spirituality in action when I see large groups of people acting for the common good, taking time out of their busy lives to address something that really needs doing. When the Wolf River campaign happened, the mine proposal at Crandon, the diversity of the coalition was notable. I named some of the major groups, but there were also people such as the chairman of the Republican Party of Lang Lake County, who was a leader in this. And I guess I see that as spirituality, people being able to respect each other, discuss things calmly, and come to a common understanding of what needs doing.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. Thank you very much for your sermon. There seems to be this ongoing debate between which is worse, regarding which is worse. Do we put it on trains? Do we put it in pipelines? And I think that misses the point as to whether we should be taking it out of the ground and moving it in the first place. But I do see this discussed frequently in the media, you know, particularly after we have one of these explosive train crashes, which is worse. Do you have any comments on that?
I think they're both worse. I mean, in terms of simple logistics, the reasons why we've got oil on trains is because the pipelines are orientated in a different direction than the oil is coming out of North Dakota. The other cost basis is that pipelines are incredibly expensive and they're dedicated. They start at a certain spot, they go from A to B. Relatively, crude by oil is a little bit more expensive per gallon, but in terms of its flexibility, the railroad tracks are often already there. And what we've got in North Dakota is really a gold rush operation, and you don't see the long-term investment in infrastructure that you see in some of the Texas oil fields. And one of the problems that leads to is that they're not degasifying the oil, and the oil is coming out in a very volatile form that we haven't seen before. It's very, very explosive. But the choice of the media saying it's got to be one or the other simply isn't true. It doesn't have to be one or the other. We didn't start driving 10 times as much as we used to start driving. The oil trains and the pipelines are a relatively recent phenomenon here in Wisconsin. Much of this oil is bound for export. It is not bound for us. And we are being put in a situation where it's all risk and no reward.
This is Chris. Thank you for your sermon, and thank you for being a congregation willing to hear the sermon. This is particularly close to me. I'm an environmental attorney and worked with Bill McKibben and Gus Speth to organize the high-profile environmentalists to do that sit-in. I also finished writing an investigation. We investigated the EPA. We finished a report last year for failing to regulate emissions from coal-fired power plants. So these are all issues that are pretty close to me. But the spirituality question that Al asked is something that I've been thinking a lot about recently. And for me, this issue is spiritual in the sense that spirituality starts by looking inwards for me. And so I've realized over my time practicing environmental law that the spirituality in these issues are, have I taken care of my home first? The investments won't come to big oil, won't come to tar sands, if we as consumers cease with the demand. And we have a choice every day to design our lives to live outside of that demand of coal, of oil, of fossil fuel combustion. And I would just ask all of us to think, how are we designing our lives each day to live outside of that demand so that the investments won't follow? And then we won't have to have these conversations in the future. And there are ways for us to design in our homes without moving out to the country and building an earthen home and things like that. There are ways for us to take the burden on ourselves spiritually, internally, within our home and our family, and then create models for our community. And then we link these communities together. So thank you for the sermon, and thank you.
We'll have time for one more question. I need Melissa.
Okay, Chris, that's hard to follow. two quick things. There was a great documentary I watched that went, it'd be even greater if I remembered the title, and it went beyond the environmental devastation to the reservations in North Dakota, and it talked about what it's doing economically and socially, not because it's devastating them economically, but devastating in the other way. It's bringing them so much money that it's causing so many problems. You know, they don't have the police force and other things. It was just fascinating. And my other question was, in Wisconsin, you said that 80 feet is enough. What is the proposed width of what they're looking for?
Let me give you a couple technical things that I have to describe. First of all, when they expand the capacity of a pipeline, the first thing they do is they increase the velocity. Tar sands crude is very abrasive, So the further it gets from the pumping station, the velocity drops off rapidly. So if they've got a pipe, as they've got line 61, and that went in about 8 years ago, they recently, last year, upped the pumping stations from 4 to 10 or 11 in Wisconsin. That allows them to push the oil through faster and, in this case, to double and even triple the capacity of the pipeline. 80 feet refers to their current corridor. Unfortunately, they want to twin line 61, and they are expanding, or they want to expand so much that they want to expand the corridor and put in a whole another pipe. There are already several pipes in that corridor. The corridor is 80 feet wide. The name 80 feet enough refers to the fact that they want even more. I look it up for yourself. The history of tar sands and crude oil is horrifying. This is extreme oil. It is a desperate product of an industry whose model is collapsing, but not fast enough. And the real question is, what are we going to be left with? I've got little doubt that in 10 years, these pipelines are going to be, quote, stranded assets. Because the people of the world, the citizens of the world, are going to say, no, you can't do that. There's going to be a very stark choice. And day by day, year by year, people will start to understand that choice and say, no, that's the end. And just as the abolition of slavery took some time, and as you may recall, many of the slave owners demanded compensation for their, quote, lost property. We will approach a similar choice in the world as far as coal, oil, and gas. The choice will become very clear. So 80 feet enough means they want a wider corridor because they want a massive expansion. I hope that answers it. Thank you.
Eric will be joining us for a coffee and conversation after the service, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to entertain any more questions and conversation you may have with him. So please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 163. Our closing words come to us from me. We know we are fortunate
to spend our days here in a land we know as Wisconsin, a place where water sparkles and is well worth caring for, where gurgling streams and wave-washed shores soothe our lives, where the bubbling springs of the moraine country and the timeless flow of the Muckwanico River brighten our Sunday afternoons, where a canoe trip to Lowy Lake or Horicon Marsh is a nearby treat. To our north, our spiritual homeland, the magnificent headwaters country of our planet's finest collection of fresh water. May our thoughts and words in the days to come have the liquid flowing grace of that sweet water. Sometimes a deep still pool, sometimes a sparkling cascade or a thundering waterfall. Each drop precious in itself and an offering to the greater good. And if the spirits of this place ask if we are worthy of that grace, the answer shall be yes. For we do not seek shallow pleasures, nor do we speak merely to hear the sound of our own voices. Rather, we seek that most lasting of joy, listening to the sounds of our community's children and their children as they see the magical sights that we have known. For thousands of years, ever since the great ice melted, the pristine waters of this place have nurtured and inspired. May it be so for another 10,000 years. Blessed be.
Thank you.